Mildred fired their weapons, covering the companions' rush to the elevator. The hail of bullets did little to slow the oncoming wave. The trannies crashed against the first barrier. One of them hit the gate, and it swung open. A second later, the rest were streaming in after it. Brian and Mildred raced into the car.
We can reflood the bottom floor and chill them all. Hit 18, JB.
Got it, Millie.
The armorer pressed the button for floor 18.
Climb up, Jack.
Jack stepped forward. As the trannies slammed the final barrier, he sent a torrent of liquid fire arching into them. The elevator doors didn't close.
Hit the fucking button, JP!
I am hitting it!
Fresh demons clambered over their burning kin and the open gate. Flames surged across the gap and through the bars. Then the flamethrower sputtered and died. The igniters still burned blue and bright, but the tanks were out of fuel. The doors started to close, but in extreme slow motion. Three demons cleared the gate and launched themselves at the open car.
Rad blast!
The combined impact of their bodies buckled in the sheet steel. The tranny in the middle managed to get a forearm between the doors just as they slid shut. Right in front of the companions' faces, the claw hand flexed, the long stinger uncoiled.
It's going to make the doors open!
Ryan already had his panga out and was swinging it down in a tight arc. The lopping slice cut the arm off, flush with the doors.
How do you like that?
The car finally started to creep upward. The severed claw lay still at their feet, but the stinger squirted drops of poison. The car rocked as the demons threw themselves full force at the doors and wall. Jack ditched the empty set of tanks and drew his .357 Magnum Colt Python. The others checked their weapons' ammo and quickly reloaded. They finally reached floor 18. The doors slid apart in slow motion. Through the widening split, they saw the hallway lights were on, and they saw the demon crouched in the corridor, preparing to jump into the elevator with them.
What the hell?
The companions flattened against the car's back wall and opened fire through the gap and into the edges of the doors, hitting the creature dozens of times as it leaped. Knocked sideways by the multiple impacts, the demon crashed into the wall and bounced onto its back. The doors opened all the way. Nobody got out of the car.
If they've already escaped the lab floor, they could be anywhere in the redoubt. We can't stop them by flooding 19.
Time to jump, while we still can.
Punch 10.
The doors closed on the demon corpse and littered hallway. The elevator moved upward. When the doors opened again, the companions were braced and ready for anything. There was no welcoming committee waiting for them this time. Christy and Jack led them on a dead run through the security gates and the heavy double doors to the redoubt's Matran section. As they entered, they could feel the idling unit's steady vibration through the floor. The banks of chattering computers indicated that the system was online and ready to process. They headed for the two portholed steel doors on the far wall. Ryan smiled broadly when he saw the scoped Steyr waiting for him atop the steel cart in front of the doors.
Glad I didn't lose this.
After shouldering its sling, he passed JB his Smith & Wesson scattergun. Then he peered into the half-open door of the nearest Matran's unit. Surprisingly, it was furnished in steel spikes.
Doesn't look too comfortable.
That's for the trannies. Advanced bioweapon deployment technology to Russia with love from Bob and Enid. The other one's for us.
Jack opened the porthole door, and the companions started filing into the little room. Jubilee held back, looking very scared.
There's nothing to worry about, girl. The machinery works just fine.
There's more to worry about if you stay.
The reminder didn't help matters. Jubilee was petrified. Mildred shot JB a "why don't you shut up and let me handle it" look.
The six of us have jumped dozens of times without any lasting ill effects. Jumping just this once won't hurt you and it won't hurt your baby. You'll just fall asleep and wake up someplace else. Someplace safe.
Gotta go, babe.
With a firm push from behind, Jubilee got into the chamber with the others. Ryan stepped in last. All around them, the armor glass was midnight black, shut through with crimson, like sprays of blood. As Ryan closed and secured the chamber door, through the porthole window, he saw demons. They burst through the swing doors, fighting one another to be first into the room, hot on the scent trail of their intended victims. One of them looked at the Matran's door and saw Ryan's face framed in the glass. From the far side of the room, it launched itself and crashed headfirst into the door. But it was too late. The Matran cycle had begun, and the room was starting to fill with mist. As the mist grew thicker, its tendrils lengthened, stretching down to curl around the heads and shoulders of the travelers.
It's gonna be all right, Jubilee. Just sit down, close your eyes, and it'll be over before you know it.
As they took their places on the floor, Ryan reached out a battle-scarred fist and took hold of Jubilee's small hand. Christie smiled at him, her emerald eyes flashing pure love, and took hold of the girl's other hand. Blackness fell from them. Ryan awoke on the floor of the chamber, his head spinning. For a second, as he struggled to regain his senses and to control the dry heaves that racked his throat and cramped his belly, he thought it had all been a dream. Little Pueblo, the dam, the pilgrims, the demons. Just another in the long chain of horrible nightmares that chased them every time they mattransed and rematerialized. When he pushed up and saw Jubilee sprawled across his leg, he knew it hadn't been a dream. Mildred had already recovered and was taking Jubilee's pulse. The woman noted the concern on Ryan's face.
She's going to be okay, Ryan. See? She's already waking up.
When the effects of the jump had passed and they had all regained their strength, they exited the chamber and found their way out of the new redoubt. The complex's hidden entrance opened onto a much different landscape than the one they had left. It was lush, and it was high. Surrounding them were steep, densely forested slopes of evergreens, and above them, blue skies.
Could be Canada.
Or Montana.
Jubilee stared at the vista in amazement and delight. She had never seen so much green in all her life. The sweet scent of wildflowers drew them away from the entrance and to the meadow below. It was dappled with pale blues, pinks, yellows. A crystal-clear brook ran through the tall grass. The jump had made them all thirsty, and they lay down on their bellies and drank their fill. Across the narrow valley, at the base of the mountain on the other side, a line of large, four-legged creatures browsed the edge of the forest.
Plenty of game here.
That's what I was thinking too, Jack. We shouldn't have any trouble finding dinner.
Ryan, look at your new wife.
The girl was sitting cross-legged in the grass, putting the finishing touches on a flower bracelet to match the brightly colored blossoms that she had woven into her hair.
Forced marriages don't count. You know that.
I don't see any sign of a settlement. No buildings, no smoke, no nothing. This is wild country. We can't leave her here. We're going to have to take her with us.
That's fine. She can come along until we find some good folks who will take in her and the baby. There must be someone somewhere in some bill who will provide room and board in exchange for work.
What about little Pueblo? What's going to become of it now?
The trannies are loose in the middle of the ville. There's no way to contain them. I'd say little Pueblo is done for.
Justice comes 100 years late.
From the edge of the canyon rim, Pilgrim Plavik surveyed paradise for the last time. To his back, the sun was setting, casting rays of soft orange light across the spread of cultivated fields and tiny, clustered settlement of Little Pueblo. Looking down from that distance at what had happened in a single terrible night was almost impossible to believe. A night of blood-curdling screams and volleys of blaster fire, and afterward, the sounds of retching. A chorus of retching that swelled and faded until nearly dawn. No one alive had dreamed that such a thing could happen. Certainly not Pilgrim Plavik. The offerings to the demons had been more than ample and made on schedule. He had seen to that. On his orders, the only door to Bob and Enid's tomb had been piled high with boulders. The demons hadn't used the door, of course. They had burrowed out through the face of the tomb and through the roof. Too many holes to count. And once free, they moved too quickly to see. The hour was late. The whole ville had been asleep. Everyone but Plavik. He had awakened after an hour or so, restless, energized in the aftermath of his victory over the one-eyed man and his companions. Sex with any one or combination of his wives hadn't interested him. He had put on his boots and left City Hall.
In the dark, he had climbed the familiar path to the top of the dam, and there watched the moon dance on the surface of the placid lake. He took stock of his kingdom and marveled anew at his fountain of luck. It was from the Dam Crest Road that he heard the agonies of Little Pueblo begin. He had no idea what was happening below, but he was unarmed, and there was nothing he could do. Blaster fire and screams echoed in the canyon for hours, followed by the retching. Then, as the sun came up, everything became still. Natural sounds, comforting sounds, took over. Birds tweeted, bugs chirped. A soft breeze rustled in the corn. Plavik waited until well after sunrise before descending the dam and returning to the city center. He found an open-air charnel house. Bodies lay in the streets, some torn limb from limb. All of them sat in rank yellow pools. At first glance and first smell, he knew that it wasn't the work of human beings. Bodies lay inside the buildings, too. The rooms of City Hall were choked with corpses. The other pilgrims, their wives and their children, had been butchered in their sleep. Little Pueblo's field hands had fared no better. Some had made it out of the low buildings that circled the square. Most had not. The killers had come in through the doors and windows, sealing off the exits. They had trapped and slaughtered the men amid the debris of their household furnishings, broken beds, and spilled mattress stuffing. And that done, they had drenched everything in yellow slime.
Hello!
Fearing the worst, Plavik had stood on the curb and shouted at the top of his lungs.
Hello!
Shouted for someone, anyone. His cries
Hello!
Echoed off the canyon walls and faded. He shouted himself hoarse.
Help!
No one came. They were
Is
all dead. His was a kingdom of one. From the trees that lined the edge of the park, he could see the holes that riddled the tomb. If there had been any doubt in his mind what had happened, it vanished in that moment. The demons had broken out. In the cover of night, they had laid a table for themselves. In darkness, they would come back again to feast. Plavik had spent his final night in Little Pueblo. It was hard for him to decide what to take. He remembered the ordeal he'd endured to reach paradise. He knew he couldn't carry enough water to last the entire journey, and that every extra ounce on his back reduced the chance of his surviving the crossing. He had been much younger then, stronger, his flesh tempered from fighting. But even more important than that, the young, hot-tempered Plavik hadn't known what he was getting into when he set off. The pain that would come, the suffering, the nearness of death. He no longer had the luxury of that ignorance. He knew precisely what he faced and how slim the odds were. Plavik looked up into the still bright sky. High overhead, riding the towering thermals created by the canyon's walls, the buzzards of Deathlands slowly wheeled and circled. Deathlands Labyrinth is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan, with Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Nanette Savard, Casey Jones, Ken Jackson, Karen Carbone, and David Coyne. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing by Dan Smith, Nathan DeBoard, Greg Reinfeld, Kyle Unaver, Johan Detweiler, and Brian Patton. Graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton and Dan Smith. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Dan Smith, Brian Patton, Chris Rowan, Nathaniel Perry, and Matt Webb. Script adapted for graphic audio by Bill Campbell. Keep listening for exciting previews from other graphic audio titles.